Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will post below this interview. Mark, let's start off with the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar today, it has rebounded a little bit from the lows of earlier this morning, but the dollar continues to be weak and I think continues to break down. I know you can add a couple arguments from that because it hasn't dropped below that low in 2018 of 88.15, but either way, this dollar downtrend is continuing, and you look across the board, there are a lot of important currencies that are continuing to break out against the dollar, especially this week. Mark, break down some of the other currencies that you are watching and the potential significance of the continued breakdown in the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, last week when we were talking about these things, I had thought that ahead of the European Central Bank meeting on December 10th, the PMI data that had just come out showing the U.S. economy may be accelerating more than people expected, while Europe seemed to be on the verge of another contraction. But so I didn't expect the breakout to take place, but not only has it taken place, but as you mentioned, it's against a wide swath of currencies. So, for example, the biggest currency besides the dollar is the euro. We've been trading 116, 120 in the euro since July. So what do you do when we're trading that 119.50, 119.60? Do you play for the breakout or do you pair back positions? So we jumped above there and we got up to roughly 120.180. So we went through that 120 like threshold, like a horse coming out of the gates, and it just raced higher. And it does look stretched and everything, but it does seem clear that dollar's weakness is very broad. The Canadian dollar here today, the U.S. had a little bit softer than expected U.S. jobs data. Canada had a bit stronger than expected jobs data as well. The Canadian dollar added on 0.5% to bring its gains to the week to something like 1.5%, and is trading at its best level since April of 2018 or so. And you see this across a range of currencies. Australian dollar, new highs for the year. With another interesting currency, Swiss franc, is new multi-year highs against the U.S. dollar. And it includes several of the emerging markets where the currency have also strengthened sharply, including Turkey and Mexico. Latin America, and this I think ties into some of your commodity interests, it's Latin American currencies that have really done the best this week looking at the emerging markets. So looking at just emerging market currencies, the top three performers are from Latin America. You got the Colombian peso up 4.25% in 1 week. Brazil is up 3.5%, and Chile is up 3%. And even with the Mexican peso up 1.5%, that just rounds out the top 10. So we have seen the dollar break out. I think this is really a bit of pushing on an open door. Even though tactically I didn't look for the breakout, strategically I've been bearish the dollar, thinking, you know, that this is the end of, or we've ended the third big dollar rally that we've had since the end of Bretton Woods. And I think that interestingly, maybe last week we talked about it as well, it's become such a popular, widespread idea that all the major investment houses, as they get ready for their analysts put together the 2021 outlooks. You've seen some major houses calling for sharp dollar losses next year.
So, Mark, what's driving all of this weakness in the dollar then? Is it the fact that COVID continues to spread around the U.S., or is it this economic data, which, fine, we got some generally weaker jobs data to end this week, but overall, the data out of the U.S. hasn't been horrible. I find it's almost fallen very much in line with a lot of other countries, outside of China, which China continues to have some pretty strong data.
Yeah, so I think you're right. So the first thing is to recognize the price action. That's what we were just talking about, reviewing the price action, thinking about what's driving it. What are the major forces? And I think that it still comes back to one, I'd say a couple of things. One is that I think people are looking beyond this next quarter, beyond this trouble that we're going to have getting COVID back under control before the vaccines can be widely enough distributed. And I think that the markets are thinking, along the, when I hear people with their clients, other market commentators, people talking about the markets, it seems to me that the heart of it, the heart of the bear case of the dollar, though people might not all use this language, would be the twin deficits. That is a very large budget deficit and a large trade deficit. And that typically, in these kind of conditions, the U.S. would have to have a growth differential favoring it or interest rate differentials favoring it. And neither case is sufficient right now. So the dollar is acting a bit of a shock absorber. And here's the other part of the issue here, I think, is thinking about valuation. Well, you know, the euro is the euro trade, as I mentioned, broke out of that 116, 120 trading range, raced up to almost 122. And the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, which is a multilateral organization of large countries, have their own models of purchasing power parity and value for currencies, and they still have the euro as among the most undervalued of the major currencies, about 17% undervalued. And so what this is reflecting part of the dollar bull dollar bear story is the dollar is overvalued against many currencies like the euro and many of the emerging market currencies. And so I think that the big driver is this twin deficit issue, and that's the framing of it. And this week, I think that the combination of the COVID outbreak, the very close elections that we're going to have in early January in Georgia, both political parties in the U.S. recognize their interest to finally get a stimulus package. And there's been a bipartisan proposal that seems to be gaining greater support. So even though, like ahead of the weekend, we had this weaker than expected jobs report, U.S. yields rose because as people began anticipating this reflation trade. And that means higher bond yields. It means higher oil prices, higher commodities in general. And I think people recognize that to also be dollar negative.
So I know it seems a bit crazy to say, but the world we live in right now is countries and governments wanting their currency to be weaker to spur some sort of economic growth and even some inflation. So overall, is the Fed, is the U.S. government happy about the weakness in this dollar?
Well, I don't think it really has been big enough yet to show up on their radar screens. That is, I'm sure that they monitor it. They know where it is. But has it become large enough to boost inflation in the U.S.? Probably not. Is it destabilizing? I think if anything, as someone at the central bank would want. So remember, the Federal Reserve is buying $80 billion of treasuries every month and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. In that context of easing monetary policy, you typically would want to have your currency go in the same direction. Otherwise, it's at cross purposes. So I would think, generally speaking, a weaker dollar is part of the solution, not yet part of the problem.
Okay, that's a good point there. Now, in terms of the fiscal package, we are hearing some more, I guess, optimistic outlooks that we could get a fiscal package potentially even before the end of the year. I'll believe it when I see it. Let's put it that way. What do you think, Mark? What's the potential here of actually a spending package getting passed?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm kind of in the same world with you, that I live in this probabilistic world. And a week ago, it didn't seem very likely. But this compromise about, like I mentioned, it's just shy of $1 trillion, could be the catalyst given these political circumstances. And again, the political circumstances have changed a bit. We've got, I believe, something like 47 of the U.S. 50 states are in red alert because of the pandemic. You've got hospitals that are being taxed beyond capacity. So you got stay-at-home orders getting more rigid in many states. You had this some economic data showing some cooling. And remember what's going to happen. Come the beginning in the next couple of weeks, we've got a big fiscal cliff ahead of us. Give you an example. 21 million students have been deferring their student loan payments. That's going to end. That deferment's going to end. You've got about 7 million people who are freelancers working under contracts that typically don't get jobless benefits. They're going to be losing about $1,060 a month. That's 7 million people. several million Americans could be vulnerable to eviction as the Federal Reserve, as the federal government's moratorium expires. You just have this different programs that aid the states and local governments. $150 billion program is going to expire. So we have this fiscal cliff, and I think that here's the trick. Here's something to watch. December 11th, a week from now, is a key date. It's a key date because the federal government's spending authorization expires. And the idea is that in order to keep, if it expires, the government part, at least you'll have a partial government shutdown. And during the pandemic, there could be very few things that one could imagine that would be a worse configuration of events than to have a government shutdown here in December. And so the idea now is to have the stimulus package, this relatively modest, right? Less than half what the Democrats had wanted, about twice what the Senate Republicans had could agree to. That this stimulus package will be part of this omnibus spending authorization bill. That'll all have to happen. They'll be like cobbled together next week. It'll have to be passed, not only passed by both houses, but the president has to sign it. There might be some problem with that, but that's the big climax we're driving to for the end of next week.
So does this mean that even though we might get a smaller than what was expected spending bill, it does open up the door for a bit more freedom to just increase spending without having to jump through all these hoops?
I don't know. I think that I would consider it $1 trillion to be a small down payment of a larger package that are likely that the Democrats will likely try to put forward next year. And of course, it's very important to see which party controls the Senate. So it's a bit of a gamble, right? If the Democrats get control of the Senate by getting those Georgia Senate seats, then the Republicans, it'll be much more difficult for them to stop a larger package. And if the Republicans get the seat, it'll be hard for the Democrats to get a larger package. So I think that both sides, it's sort of a bit like game theory. Both sides are trying to maximize the expected outcomes.
Okay. Mike, let's wrap it up with a quick look to next week. You and I were chatting off mic, and your focus is going to be largely in Europe. Can you share what's going on in Europe in terms of an ECB meeting and, well, a bunch of other factors, actually?
Yeah, so you're right. Even though I say that we have this big drama coming at the end of next week in the U.S., for most of the week, Europe will be front and center. We do have that ECB meeting. That's on Thursday, and the ECB often used to pride itself on not pre-committing, has pre-committed. And they're going to ease, and it's just a question of how big and for how long. But that's not the only thing. In fact, in some ways, the ECB meeting with these new actions and the new forecasts are only part of the story in Europe. Other big story, Brexit. As we go into the weekend, there's some expectations that there could be an agreement as early as this weekend. That is a new trade deal between the UK and the EU. But that's not where the story for the UK ends. What's happening is that the UK had divorced from the EU on this agreement called the withdrawal agreement. Well, now the UK government is trying to change that, to modify it, to basically strengthen its hand. Change the treaty, the withdrawal agreement, to give it greater control. That would be on Monday, where what's happened is the bill went to the House of Lords. House of Lords tried to dilute it a little bit. It goes back to the House of Commons, and they're going to make it tough again. And then the next day, there's going to be a new bill. I think it's called a financing bill. And one of the things that it will do is it will weaken that withdrawal agreement further by allowing the UK to make unilateral decisions about which goods need to have a levy to tariff on because of the new trading relationship. And this gives them, again, more unilateral control. So these things come to a head in the UK Parliament Monday and Tuesday with or without an agreement this weekend. And then another dramatic thing next week, at the end of next week in Europe, the leaders have a summit. And one of the big things that need to be discussed is next year's budget. And the problem with it is that Poland and Hungary are vetoing it because the EU, the majority in the EU, want to use this recovery fund within the budget to punish Poland and Hungary for not having sufficient respect for the rule of law. Some decisions in Europe can be decided by what they call a qualified majority, say 75% or something like that. But other decisions require unanimity, everybody to agree. And it's very difficult to get people who are going to get punished to agree to it. So Europe's in a tough position, and we'll have a better idea in a week from now, but there's a big drama besides the ECB, besides Brexit, the two big issues from Europe that have really dominated. But next week's summit, at the end of the week, is going to also be a very important for the sort of groundwork for Europe.
So just to wrap it up then, touching back on the initial comments on the weakness in the U.S. dollar, how can the euro continue to move higher in the face of the U.S. dollar as they're dealing with all of these issues?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like partly, on one hand, I want to say it's a bit of a contest. Like, and it just so happens that right now the U.S. is seen to be a little bit more ugly. But on the other hand, I think that these things to know about the EU or the U.S. budget issues, they're all important and everything. But I wonder if it's just the melody or the speed of the song or the rhythm rather than the actual direction the music is taking us. So I think is really about market positioning, and it's more about a weak U.S. dollar than a positive euro story. But because the euro is so big and so liquid, when money is leaving the dollar, where can it go? It's got to get to another big pool. And so I think the euro is being carried up for the most part by just the flows out of the dollar.
Okay. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for this broad recap, especially looking at the currency markets and some interesting moves and continued breakdown in the U.S. dollar. Something to look forward to next week. All that news coming out of Europe. And also, who knows, we might maybe get some sort of a fiscal package, or at least more clarity on that fiscal package at the end of next week. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. Again, I will post a link to that Mark to Market blog. Have a great rest of your day, Mark, and a great weekend.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Good luck.